What's going on, everybody? This is Black Men Sunday. So I'm your host, Corey Sylvester Murray, and we're talking about generational wealth, mental health, finance, and business. It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate. And before we introduce today's guest, my brother Eric from Huntsville, back in Hunts, Vegas. Who do you have for our Black Men Sunday Spotlight, my brother?
Man, today's spotlight, we're going to focus on a young lady. Her name is Nasara James Dabolo. Now, Nasara is a 13-year-old girl from Nigeria who caught attention with her incredible feat. She solved 34 math problems in just 172 seconds, winning a gold medal in the junior category. Now, Nasara, who's a student in Idea College International in Kaduna, she went against 150 other competitors worldwide, securing a total score of 145. Now, along with this gold medal, Nasara earned the Olympipad champion title in prestigious competition that gathers participants from over 100 countries. Now, shortly after her IMO victory, Nasara took the IQ test and aced it under strict supervision. Her IQ score was 150, puts her in the top 1% globally among the Messina applicants. What's more, Nasara recently bagged an award for memorizing a whopping 673 binary numbers in less than 9 minutes at the Memory Championship by Mind Sports Olympiad. That's my spotlight for today. Miss Nasara James Dablo, back to you, Corey.
That's what I'm talking about, man. That's a spotlight right there, my brother, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. All right, let's go on and introduce today's guest, man. We're talking to Dr. Herbert Harris. This brother is Black Men Sunday. He's an alum. This brother's been on the show 3 years ago. This brother just came on the show November, December when we were doing our debate. This brother is legit. This brother's a Columbia University grad. I would say of every Black Men Sundays guest that's ever been on the show, I listen to him 3 times a week, every week. I get up, let my dogs out, and I'm going to my Instagram, Dr. Herbert Harris, Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, let me tell you, man. But let's run down some of this brother's accolades before I introduce him, man. This brother's a Columbia University grad, retired attorney. This brother also worked at Time Magazine. And this brother's also known, and the way I met him, he's known as the author of the 12 Universal Laws of Success. And I have the Super Achiever edition, so I think I'm doing all right. So without further ado, Dr. Herbert Harris, man, welcome back to Black Men Sundays, brother. How you doing?
Corey, it's always a pleasure to be back, man. I tell you, I love what you're doing and the message you bring and that vibration that you send out to say, hey, young brothers, pay attention. There's something going on in the world and you need to be aware. So thank you for being a keeper of the light.
Oh, definitely, man. And I just want to thank you for all the morning inspirations. You know, some days are better than others. Some days I wake up, I'm feeling like $1 million bucks, man. Let the dogs out. You know, I might be doing my two-step out the door. Then other days I'm dragging, man. I don't feel like it today. Then other days I'm kind of like, I'm okay. But then I get the inspiration from you. And then, you know, sometimes you're on the beach. Sometimes you at the house, sometimes you out of town. And I'm like, man, I'm just getting up. This brother's already fully dressed. You know what I'm saying? So let's jump right in, man, because one thing that I love about you is you're very inspirational. And I just hear a lot of brothers saying, man, you know what? It's May. It's almost June. Man, you know, yeah, the new year just really started. I got plenty of time. I haven't really set my goals. I haven't really done much. I just been, you know, going through the, you know, come home, work, rinse and repeat cycle, but I have goals. I want to be an entrepreneur. I have things going on, but I'm not really doing that. But, you know, I have plenty of time because there's still a lot more time in this year. Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, Corey, it's interesting you start with that. You know, I'm co-minister at a Unity Church here in Wilmington, and I always open my lessons and my sermons with I have a date method, and what I do is I calculate where we are in the year. You know, so to say today is May 30th or May 18th, whatever day it is, that's fine. But what I'll say is something like, well, today is the third Sunday of the fifth month. And that means that we have less than 7 months left in the year. And I like to do that because it gives you perspective. If you've been sliding and gliding, coasting and boasting, instead of being at work on your goals and on your plan, then you look up, you say, well, wait a minute, 5.5 months are gone, and I have not accomplished the goals, especially when you have benchmarks. You know, if you were going to save $4,800 a year, say, well, my goal is to buy a house in 2 years. Well, great. What do you need? I need about $10,000 down payment. I get my credit together and make sure that, my income will support a mortgage. Okay. So now how are you going to get 10 grand? Well, if I save $100 a week for 2 years, I actually got $10,000. And so if I have been following that plan, then I'm good. Then that means if this is the second month of the fifth month, well, 5 months have gone by. That's roughly 5 times 400. That's about $2,000. And then another. So I should have around $2,200, $2,300 in my stash. But if I look up at the fact that it's the third Sunday of the fifth month and I only have $1,000, I'm behind. Now I know that I have 7 months later left to make it happen. So I love that date analogy. It's always important to know where you are on the schedule of your goal setting activities. Whatever your goals you set for this year, then measure where you are at each step along the way. The GPS will tell you, oh, you're 20 miles away, you're 40 miles away. If you don't have that success GPS for your activities, you'll look up one day and 12 months are gone and you're still standing in the gate.
I got you. Well, you know, I'm saying, man, I might be living paycheck to paycheck. I don't really have no money to put aside, man. I'm broke.
Well, you know, broke is a word that I really dislike because broke is a state of mind. And as long as when you say I am broke, you create a broke vibration. And the law of vibration says you attract what you feel. So if you're broke and you feel broke, you're going to attract more brokenness. I like to look at the concept, I am temporarily between funds. Okay. So this way, I may not have the money in my bank account, but I know in my spirit that the money's on the way. And I know it's on the way because I've been doing the activities necessary to make it come. I've been making my calls. I've been making my appointments. I've been studying. I've been showing up in whatever way I have to show up to make it happen.
Well, great information, man. And, you know, we've spoken to you a few times. So what's new in 2025 for you, brother?
Well, you know, this year is a graduation. And one of the things I've been finding, I get more calls from people who say, Herb, I love your book, Doc. Your book is the only one that my son and my daughter's in the 11th grade. They're getting ready to graduate. Your book is the only one that they'll read. I bought them Napoleon Hill. I bought them The Magic of Thinking Big. I bought them all these books, but yours is the only one that they will read. And so the 12 Universal Laws of Success was written for a person to be able to access just what they need to know without going through the whole book. You can go to that chapter on focus. It's a standalone chapter. And so this year, we've been really promoting what I call the perfect gift to say, hey, when we look at the climate in which we're living right now in the country and in the world, that our young people are the next generation of leadership. And if we as current leaders don't set them up with the proper tools, they're going to be out there on the battlefield unprepared. And so that's what this month of May and June, we've been really, well, actually, we started in the middle of April. We've been actually focusing on getting the 12 universal laws out there into the hands of people. We call it the perfect gift, and letting them plug in not only with the book, to plug in with some of our other online stuff going on, and saying, hey, this is, If there's one gift you can give somebody to change their life, this is it. So that's been our focus. We even set up a website, and it's called theperfectgift.me. You can't beat that. Theperfectgift.me, and people can order autographed copies of the book. I sign it, autograph it. If they order 3 or more copies, we've been really offering a special vacation. We found a company that, you know, a lot of times these resorts have empty rooms. And so there's a company that helps fill those rooms. And so whenever people buy three or more copies of the 12 Universal Laws of Success, we can get them a 7-night, 8-day vacation, man, complimentary. They pay the tax and everything. But wow, the whole stay is on the house. So that's been our focus now. Sometimes you have to dangle a carrot out there for people to see it. But over these next really 4 to 6 weeks, I'd love all of us adults, all of us who know young people, even it may not be a family member, say, hey, let me put something in your hands as a graduate from high school, from trade school, as a graduate to the next level of your life. Let me put something in your hands that can change your life. And so that's why we recommend the perfectgift.me, www.theperfectgift.me.
That's what I'm talking about, man. Yeah, because I know I bought the book last year, and I bought about 7 copies from my mentees that were graduating last year. So, you know, a lot of them were like, you got us a book. I'm like, just pop it open, read it. And then it's been all love ever since, man. But let's crack that book open, man, because I feel like when I talk to you, or not talk to you, but just when I'm tuning in to you Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, and sometimes Saturdays, man, you're, you know, pulling out elements from the 12 Universal Laws of Success. So let's talk about that, because, you know, brothers listening to this show, you know, are CEOs, brothers fresh out of college, brothers about to go to college, you know, brothers about to retire. Like, we have all the flavors on here. So let's, you know, crack open some of those universal laws and apply them to our lives, like right now. And I'll let you pick the one. But, you know, obviously this Black Men's Sunday, so obviously something financial, you know, business kind of thing. Let's talk about that.
You know, one of the chapters in the book that I think really stands out with young people, with all people, is we call it the law of value, the 8th law. And because business, money, and these things come under the law of value, what do you consider important in your life? If you don't have a high value, for example, money is okay. Money is good. Some people say, oh, money is the root of all evil. The Bible didn't say that. It says money can be the root of all kinds of evil. And so one of the main things that we like to teach in the book is money is a powerful servant, but a terrible master. And so we want to work with people to say, hey, money is a tool that you can use to free up your time. Once you solve the riddle of survival, once you've gotten off of that rat race of, you know, more month at the end of the money, where every month you're going in the hole deeper and deeper. Once you can get off of that rat race, that almost a wheel, then you can now say, okay, I got some breathing room now. Let me look at my purpose. God did not put me here to be struggling this way. And so what can I do to align myself with the purpose of my creation? And so that's that mindset that money, material possessions are tools, but they are not to be worshipped and not to rule you. I've seen people be a slave to name brands. Oh, I can't put my child in nothing unless it has a name brand on it. This kid is 5 months old. He can't read, okay? But people put that type of emphasis on a material idea, a name brand. So for our young people now, for everybody listening to the program, it's time now, number one, to develop a right relationship with money, to look at it as a powerful tool that can bring you freedom, that can give you, help you change the lives of other people, that can give you and your family more options. Money is about giving you options. It's not about ruling you. Number two, to realize that your most valuable asset is your time. You see, money can actually be replaced. You can go broke. You can go, some people have been bankrupt 4 or 5 times, but your time cannot be replaced. And so when we start looking at value, entrepreneurship, money, and changing our lives, what we do with our time is even more important than what we do with our money. And so a part of that value system that will help you get where you want to go this year is to ask yourself from moment to moment, what's the best use of my time right now when I consider my goals, my vision, and my purpose, and then act accordingly. I was speaking with a group of young people, and I said, well, what do you do most of the time during the day? And half of the group said, we chill. I said, well, what does that mean? What do you do when you chill? See, I don't do anything. Maybe I'll listen to music, you know. I may watch a game, but basically I'm not doing anything productive for me. I'm not creating an idea to build something. I'm not learning more so I can bring more value to the workplace or more value to my life. I'm not building relationships with other people who can help me along the way. And so be aware of your money, but even more importantly, be aware of your time. Time is a powerful asset. The third thing is to learn how to live by a budget. If you don't have a budget, you will always be broke. Every company, every corporation. You see, life is a business. Life is a business just like a McDonald's is a business. If a McDonald's does not make money, if you spend more and have greater expenses than income, it's going to go out of business. If you have greater outflow than income, you're going to have an unhappy life. You're going to have a life without some of the material things that can make your life easier. Let's put it like that. And so let's look at this idea of working from a budget, which means to understand money from a point of view of the flow. The flow of money is money comes in. When we talk about the law of wealth in this eighth chapter, there are four aspects of it. Money comes in, what's called the earning principle. As long as you are changing hours for dollars, exchanging hours for dollars, you want to earn as much as you can from the time you spend on a job. So you can have a job that makes $10 an hour. When I practice law and you're on a trial, you're billable $400 to $500 an hour. So your hourly rate is based on the value you bring to the program. So the earning principle says earn as much as you can and increase your value to earn more. The second principle is the spending principle. Now, I don't even like that term, but that's the term they call it. I like to call it the circulating principle. Spending has a connotation that if you spend money, it's gone forever. But circulating the money means that if you send it out, it's going to bring back something. If you invest, you get a return. So you are very, very aware. Like, I don't buy brand new cars anymore. I used to. My ego used to tell me, man, I want a new car that nobody else has driven. And the moment I got that car and drove off the lot, I just lost $15,000. Okay. So my thing now is, hey, I love luxury cars. And what I find is that people who buy luxury cars take pretty good care of them. And so if you get one 2 or 3 years old, you can get a good deal. And so to spend intelligently with the idea of always getting something in return. The third principle is the saving principle. And you said something interesting. I remember I have had friends say, well, Doc, yeah, I hear what you're saying about this budget stuff. And, you know, like when I get some money, I don't have anything to budget. You know, I don't have anything to save. I'm not making enough money to save. That's the reason you need to save. You see, if you're not making any money or enough income to support your lifestyle, to take you from where you are to where you want to be, if you're not setting aside some, you will never get out of that situation. And so the fact that your money is funny means you automatically need to be saving, because it is that saving now that creates a mindset. You know, Corey, it's not just like I say, tied 10% to you. No matter how much you're making, if you're making $100 a week, $1,000 a week, $5,000 a week, no matter how much, tithe 10% to yourself. And that means put it in a separate envelope, a separate account, a separate thing, so it's not even existing anymore. In your mind, you don't even, it's out of your budget. That when you enter that savings principle, it is only through savings that you accumulate. You know, many people say, well, I can't accumulate, I just need to make more money. But you'll find that if you make more money, the more money you make, it seems like your expenses rise. The more you get, the more you spend. But the moment you take control of that and say, let me save 10% of this. At my age, I need to be saving 20%. You know, I'm going to live to be 160 and then think about what I want to do after that. So you definitely want to get old and run out of money. So set aside 20%. In other words, invest in your future. Anything you save is an investment in your future. Once you have saved a certain amount, then you want to go to the number four key, which is the investment key. Investment is where you take your money and let your money make money for you. Now, some people invest in real estate, that's fine. But basically, pure investing is you invest in an asset, and that asset generates money for you. And so the guideline I want to sort of close this cycle with is earn as much as you can by making yourself more valuable. Circulate the proper amount using intelligence so that you always realize that everything you send out is a seed. And so don't waste your seed on frivolous things. Save. Save a portion of what you earn no matter what. Should not be dependent on the amount you earn. It's an absolute decision to save a certain percentage. And then once you have set aside enough money for you and your family to live at least 6 months without a dime coming in, then you consider now investing so that your money can take care of you. So that's my take on the law of value. If there's one, this is something the young people need, because more and more, not just the young people, all of us need it, because the way the world is right now, there are going to be some serious financial challenges over these next few years. And if you don't master money, money will master you. Back to you, Corey.
Oh, man, that's what I'm talking about. And before I let my brothers chat with you, I just wanted to talk about something you talk about a lot, man. And that's, you know, fear, you know. And I remember you said it, and I remember I was watching the Michael Jordan documentary, and some reporters was asking him, you know, man, this is a big game coming up. You're not nervous. You're not worried if, you know, what if you miss all the shots? And he says, well, why would I worry about that? I haven't taken a shot yet. You know, I might get out there, be nervous, and make every shot. So let's talk about like the fear, because I feel like a lot of people that I speak with on a regular make great money, great, you know, have great assets. But sometimes when it's time to elevate to the next chapter, you kind of get a little complacent, or the fear kicks in. Well, I'm not comfortable doing that. Let's talk about that fear, man.
Fear, I love the mnemonic, and it says fear is F is false, E, evidence, A, appearing, R, real. And so number one, fear is not real. Fear is an emotional reaction. Fear is almost like a theft of potential. In the Bible, the book of Job, and Job says, the things I feared have come upon me. And so in this world, when we fear stuff as a result of lack and limitation, I'm afraid to go for a new job because I might not get it. I'm fearful. Let me stay in this comfortable position I'm in. It's not that bad. Fear of starting a new relationship. Man, I've been hurt so many times. None of these people tell the truth. Fear of stepping out on faith. You know, you look at many times you get that opportunity that comes your way. And that fear based on past failures. You know, fear has a history. fear based on past failures. And then you compound past failure with people around you who remind you of every past failure. You know, you come with a new idea. Like, I got an idea. I think this will work. Oh, no, not another idea. I remember the last one. We lost money on that. And so fear is that false vibration, that false emotion. The way that you neutralize fear is to treat fear as a dress rehearsal for success. That if you fear it, fear is like the resistance. Think about this. Dawn Lovell, one of our associates, did a talk Saturday on the power of lift. And she was saying that a plane gets off the ground because of lift. You look at how many thousands of pounds a plane weighs. You're like, well, how can that plane get off the ground? You have a jet engine pushing it along, but the reason that the plane flies is because it meets resistance from the air. So the air is coming at it. The plane is a certain angle, and the very air that's resisting causes it to rise. And so when you're fearful, know this, that whatever you fear, if you overcome it, and how do you overcome it? You overcome it through faith. Faith and fear cannot exist, coexist. And so when you have fear, have faith that you can overcome it. You have to have that Goliath moment. When David's facing Goliath, he was scared. Nobody else volunteered. The king said, look, I'll give you all kinds of riches if you go out there and kill Goliath. And everybody in the camp was like, I don't think so, Doc. King, that guy's big and he's got a sword. I'm not going out there. I'm scared to death. But David said, you know what? As big as that guy is, I can't miss. And so David took five stones, these stones of understanding, the stones of knowledge, the stones of the stuff that you believe in, your core values. And so when you stick to your core values, you can overcome fear with faith that you can accomplish it. Faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. So David was hopeful that he would kill Goliath, okay? But you didn't see any evidence around it. All the evidence that he's 7 feet tall, he's got a big sword, he's mean, he's ugly, man. And you're going up against him, a shepherd boy with no tools, no sword. Even when the king said, here, take my sword, take my armor. David said, well, no, that stuff doesn't fit me. Let me go with what I know. So fear is a natural emotion, but the key is to not be overcome by fear. To use fear as a motivator to make you rise.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm going to leave it right there right now. I'm going to let my brothers chat with you because I got about a few more questions. All right, fellas, stage is open. Talking with Dr. Herbert Harris out of Wilmington, North Carolina.
Well, yeah, this is Kalali out of Calvert, Maryland. First of all, just want to Calvert County, Maryland. Just first of all, I just want to say thanks for sharing all of that wealth of knowledge with us. This very thankful that you're able to come and share and are willing to come and share, you know, knowledge with us. Like Corey said, you've been on the show, you know, just about your third time on here. So we definitely happy that you keep coming back and sharing the wealth of knowledge with us. I wanted to ask a couple of questions. My first question is, you know, you talked about, you know, saving money, and money being an investment in your future self. We have a situation with a lot of our, you know, a lot of our brothers and sisters that are in lower income situations where they don't even think they're going to make it till tomorrow. So why would they save until tomorrow? And do you have any ideas, thoughts on how we can overcome that mentality so we can get to a mentality where we can, you know, plan, dream, and think for a better day in the future?
Kalali, that's a great question. And I'll say this, that one of the ways that when you have light funds, when your funds are short, is to combine the money. You notice other people come here from other countries and they'll live 13 to a room. They'll do a very menial job. You'll have them making $8 an hour, but it's 20 of them making $8 an hour. You add it up. That's what? 8 times 20, that's at $160 an hour. You work 8 hours like that. They say, well, we'll live on 60. That's $100 an hour. We've saved $800. And so one of the things that one of, you might say, the vestiges, the carryover from the slavery paradigm is that fear of getting together. Whenever we have gotten together, we can overcome stuff. And so I think we need to teach our young people to get together and work together in harmony. By yourself, it can be done, but if in a group, it's much easier. So work together. Hey, guys, look, you're not making any money. You're not making any money. How can we pool our time, our talents, and make more money? Take a certain amount of that money to build something that we want to do. We want to have a company. You know, there's certain cultures that come here, and they'll be working in a store. Then a year later, they own the store. And then a year later, they own another store. And then a year later, they own the block. And it's from coming and working together. So for people of color, for African Americans, I think a major part of getting out of that cycle is to work together. Individually, you can do it, but it's much stronger to work together under the guidance of a mentor. You know, there's always got to be a Moses. You know, God didn't tell the people of Egypt, like, save yourselves. Good luck. Hang in there. He said, get Moses. Somebody has to lead the pack. And so, number one, you young men, as enlightened people in your era, need to start preaching this. Hey, let's get together. Let's pool our resources, because then we can leverage that into great things.
That's awesome. I think that's an awesome point about collective action, you know, overcoming. Because a lot of times what we get from the system is rugged individualism. That's what they call rugged individualism. I can pull myself up by my bootstraps, but really, you know, I haven't seen where too many people have succeeded that they haven't been able to get together. It always reminds me of the hip hop example, right? Wu-Tang Clan, right? Nobody thought that 9, 10 brothers could get together, right, and create an empire for themselves and get themselves out of poverty. But they did that by collective action. They did that by all going in one direction with one vision and getting out of there. So I think that's a great point about collective action. And then do you want to say something?
No, but that's just, part of the whole Kwanzaa tradition. Collective action.
My other question is, so I'm part of a church as well. I'm down here, like I said, down here in Calvert County, Maryland. I'm at Calvert County Baptist Church. And at my church, I also lead a financial peace class. It's called Faith Through Finances. So we try to, teach the congregation and the wider community about how to manage their finances correctly. So for those of us who believe, I just wanted to say that you made an excellent point. Kind of just want to reemphasize that point for those of us who believe, you made an excellent point, that God gives us a purpose in life, right? And a purpose and our purpose in life is not to pay bills and be in debt. Right. In fact, it's the debt that keeps us from achieving our purpose. Because as long as I'm paying attention to that debt, I can't pay attention to whatever the purpose, direction God wants me to go in life. Because just like you said, the money is my master. The things that I own are actually owning me. I gotta pay attention to that. And so I was just wondering if you could expound on that point just a little bit more.
Yeah, the let's do a spiritual treatment that we go back to the book of Genesis, and it says God created the heavens and the earth. So that meant that God had a vision, and he spoke that vision. He said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And so this is like what we call the law of manifestation. You speak your world into existence. And in the book of John, it talks about in the beginning was the Word. And so that's like thought number one, that the word, what you say about yourself, is powerful. And then we go on down to another section of Genesis where it talks about Adam and Eve. And remember, it says that God told Adam, said, if you go into the Garden of Eden, and you can eat of all the other fruit and trees, but if you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and that's the power of choice. He said, if you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, then you will be as gods. And that means that you have the power now to create your world based on your thoughts. And so when we look at, where we are, our condition, if we are created by God and we are made in the name and nature of God, then God does not create lack and limitation. God does not create suffering and all these things. So where do they come from? Well, they come from wrong information, wrong knowledge. George Burns once said that there was a movie called Oh God, and a kid asked George Burns, he said, if you're God, why do you create darkness? Why do you create sickness? Why do you create these negative things? And he said, look, I'm God, but I've never been able to figure how to create an up without a down, how to create light without darkness. And so what we find is we are created in the nature and image of God, but we have the choice, and we can choose to let past hurts, past disappointments, create a limitation thinking in our minds about what we can't do. We got big dreams, but I don't have any education. We got big dreams, but I don't have any money, but I don't know the right people. And so once we assume that this very basic assumption, and that's the message of the prodigal son. See, each story in the Bible is really about you. I like to look at the Bible as a personal story, and everybody in there is some aspect of me. So the prodigal son goes out into the far country and wastes his money, and he's in the pig pen of life. But the prodigal son said something very powerful. He said, in my father's house, even the servants have food enough and more. And so that's saying that no matter what my condition, I may be broke, busted, disgusted, and trusted, but God created me whole and in the nature of God, then I must be in the wrong situation. How do I get out? This is not me. I ain't supposed to be here. And then it goes on, and in the book of Luke, it says, he says, I will arise and go to my father. In other words, he chooses to negate the negative situation he's in and replace that negative situation with the abundance that his father has. So for our young people, don't let your situation define you. You're better than that. Don't let other people define you. You have more talent than that. But you have to step up. You have to arise, and you have to go back to your source. You have to say, I don't deserve this. I deserve good things. I deserve positive things. I deserve a better education. I deserve good health. And use the power of affirmation now to help create that new world.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Definitely appreciate that.
You know, I speak to a lot of brothers all the time that, you know, like I said, live a nice life, but they're like, man, I'm kind of wanting to do something a little different. I want to be an entrepreneur. I'm a little nervous to do it. I kind of want to do it because I hear so many success stories about entrepreneurs, but then I hear so many stories of they're not really making any money. They're spending more than they're making. So how do I, as a professional that's used to working a 9 to 5, you know, I go do the job. I know the check is in there every 2 weeks or whenever we get paid. But then when you talk to entrepreneurs starting out, they're like, man, I may not get a check for 6 months. So they're saving their money. But for people that are trying to get over that hump where it's like, I want to be an entrepreneur, but I don't know if I can go through without making any money. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, that's an excellent question, Corey. And the moment you decide to be an entrepreneur, I have a course now that I'm getting ready to, I'm a part of the Great Discovery, and it's an e-learning platform. And I'm getting ready to put a course up that answers that question about, should I consider being an entrepreneur? And some of the things that you need to look at is, number one, your own mindset. You see, some people have a job mentality. They can't work unless they have definiteness, okay? That know every Friday that money is coming. So to look at your mindset and say, can I create a vision of the way I'd like my life to be as an entrepreneur? And can I hold fast to that vision and make it come true? So once you say that, yes, I can create that vision. I can hold fast. What do I have to do? Then number two is this. The moment you decide to become an entrepreneur, you've gone from the personal to the business. And so everything that a business requires to be successful is you're gonna have to do as an entrepreneur. When you say entrepreneur, that means you're in business. So that means you gotta have a budget. That means you gotta have some resources. That means you gotta have a business plan. And so once you make that decision and say, okay, so I just can't be excited about it and go out and throw some, so many times you see these programs, get rich quick, man, and, you know, you put in some money and do A, B, C, and D, 99% of the times they're not going anywhere. And so once you say, if I'm going to be an entrepreneur, then I need to act just like a business. And so I need to ask, what is my business plan? What are my goals? What do I want to accomplish in this business? What will it take money-wise, time-wise, expertise-wise? And how will I fund it? How will I make it happen? And so when you approach it from that way, it may say, hey, you should be an entrepreneur, but you can't quit your job today. You can't even quit your job next week or next month. But if you now have this vision in front of you, now you have a budget, you know that to give your business a chance, you need to have a nice $10,000 cushion, for example. So now you have that discipline. See, entrepreneurship requires discipline. You have that discipline to say, okay, I need to take a year to save this $10,000 so that I can then go to the next step with some type of security that I can get to a profit-making situation to take care of me and my family. And so the short answer to that is, to be an entrepreneur, you have to think like a business. All the things that businesses do, you have to be able to do them. And so you are not only the business, but you're also the employee. And you have to have that mindset now to think from the business head and lay it out and function that way. Stop hand to mouth. Stop reacting emotionally. You know, like they often tell you, it's just business. Yeah. So act according to plan. But we need to teach that more, because jobs and the security of pensions is becoming a thing of the past. And not for a good reason. You know, they tell you that stuff, you know, like, self-determination. But everybody doesn't necessarily have that discipline. Not that everybody can't get it, but everybody doesn't necessarily have it. And so entrepreneurship is going to be the wave of the future, to be able to now take control of your life, take control of your finances, and handle it in such a way that you can survive and thrive from a worker mentality to a business mentality.
That's what I'm talking about, man. And Dr. Harris, man, you enjoying yourself on Black Men Sundays?
I am, man. Listen, anytime I can get around some sharp, intelligent brothers, that's something I love doing, because that's my job, man. I've been blessed to live a long time and to be in my right mind and still have a little zip in my strut and cut in my stride. And so God has blessed me with that, to be able to be here for you, to be able to say that when you come asking, all you have to do is say, hey, Doc, can you do it? And I'm here. You know, I normally don't do too much. This is about the only program I do on Sundays, as I think back, you know. But I think it's that important. So I salute you, brother, and you keep doing it. I want to, of course, remind your folks about, of course, the perfect gift. You know, that when you start thinking of entrepreneurship, one of those sub-companies of Amway bought 25,000 copies of the 12 Universal Laws of Success, because they understood that better people make better entrepreneurs. And so once again, that perfect gift, www.theperfectgift.me, and you get autographed copies of the book. And when you buy three or more copies, we'll give you a complimentary 7-night, 8-day vacation somewhere in an incredible place in the world. You pay the tax on it, etc., but the vacation, the housing is all complimentary.
All right. That's what I'm talking about, man, with Dr. Herbert Harris, man. This has been your third time on Black Men Sundays. Thanks for coming on, man. I can't wait for Monday meditation tomorrow.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it. And keep up the good work, folks. It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away.